Welcome to a Criterion laser disc. This is a proud moment in every young man's life, kind of like discovering masturbation or having his first youth. This is a Criterion laser disc, and at this moment, we'd just like to say, fuck DVD. Hi, this is Kevin Smith, your director, Chasing Amy, writer as well. We got a bunch of people gathered here, and we're going to chat about this little flick. Let me throw some introductions around the room. Across from me, Scott Mosier, Uber producer, my ying to my yang, my cherry pie, Clerks, Mars, Chasing Amy. Scott, big shout out.
Hello.
Next to him, we got Bob Hawk, a man who discovered Clerks and associate produced here on Chasing Amy and has been with us every step of the way. Bob, say hello.
Hi.
Over here, we got the man, the legend, the Kev Smith manke, if you will, in Chasing Amy, wishfully thinking so. An actor beyond comparison, Ben Affleck, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I want to throw shouts out to my peeps, and I don't have any peeps, really, so just say what up.
Next to him, we got John Gordon, our executive over at Miramax, the man that moves and shakes and makes things happen. Reamed this movie in, brought it back to the Big M, our first home with the movie Clerks. John, give a shout out.
Hey.
Over here, we got who we consider to be the Mew-askew historian, a director in his own right. Fellow's got a very good movie by the name of Better Place. Vincent Pereira, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
And over here, last but not least, somebody chowing down. He came for the free food. He came to make a few comments.
Melons.
Jason Melons Muse, ladies and gentlemen.
Bat Buds.
You saw Muse. Bob Hawk's credit.
We just saw Bob Hawk's credit. Credit reel that was designed, I guess,
a self-aggrandizing effort as I've ever seen.
Completely. I just wanted to have myself drawn into a comic book. And the artwork there was a combination of Matt Brundage and Mike Allred artwork on the actual comic strip. The covers that you see throughout the movie, the covers of Blunt Man and Chronic 1, 2, and 3, those are drawn by Mike Allred exclusively. This con we set up for how much, Scott?
All in, it costs about $2,000.
That's right, man, $2,000, the faux con. We threw up a convention. Walter came to the set one day. Walt Flanagan, there's Mike Allred, the guy that you blew up Man and Chronic. Walt came to the set the day we were shooting this and said it was the best con he'd seen in Jersey in years. Unfortunately, it was fake.
Originally, that was a long Steadicam shot, too, and he cut it up to make it look bigger.
It's all right. It was a long, tedious... First appearance. Speaking of tedious. Here he is right here. I remember this cat was always trying to come up with business for himself in the picture. And one of the things he was always trying to come up with was how he was obsessed with Mike Allred's Madman comic. How it was a book full of class, I believe you called it.
It was a classy book. What I'm doing is not a classy book.
That's
the way Kevin feels about his own films and other directors' films.
That's right. There were some lines. In fact, if we would have left the whole take in there, the beginning of the take, he goes, this is a classy book. And then he goes, who's next? Here we got Jason Lee's first appearance. And across from him is Uber producer Scott Mosier in one of his many many jacket and mustache roles, I like to refer to them. You might remember Scott from Clerks. He was Willem the Idiot Man-Child, where he had a big old full beard looking like Grizzly Adams. And this flick, right before we shot this scene, I guess the day before, so we were talking about the look of it, and Mosier was like, can I shave off my beard and just leave a mustache? And I said, as long as it's thin. There you got it.
Oh, that's my brother, Casey Affleck, behind Scott. He's
right
about
behind
to show
Scott's
up.
Scott's Casey.
Here he comes.
Hey, man.
Looking like Ben.
Look at the look he gives Mosier.
There's a performance.
Scott still hasn't paid my brother's salary for this.
That's how Ben got the role, because we hired his brother, and then we like...
Casey said, I know this other guy, he might be good for the flick, and so we threw Ben into...
Might be good for the stale, straight guy role.
To a minor role.
And he prepared 3 or 4 weeks for that role.
Also, a couple of lines cut out right there.
Which line?
When he's like, it's not tracing, oh, but it is.
We dropped a couple, keep the momentum going.
Come to think of it, there's a whole 10 minutes they got dropped in the beginning.
It is, which we'll see later on at the end. There's a whole opening scene, which I guess you'll see at the end of the disc, yes.
Nothing to do, you fucking
Hear that one? Mucking with a G? Anyone know where that comes from?
No, Kev. Where does that come from?
Well, that's a line lifted from The Untouchables. Sean Connery says, you're mucking with a G, pal. Scott, do your Sean Connery.
You're mucking with a G, pal.
Do the other Sean Connery, the one from Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
Which one?
You should have mailed it to the Marx Brothers.
You should have mailed it to the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, Sean Connery's with us, ladies and gentlemen. He's got some things to say about Chasing Amy. Say it again.
Pardon?
Say it again, Sean.
Say what, the Marx Brothers?
Yeah, do it. We're pretending Connery's with us.
It's a wonderful film.
It's the worst Sean Connery ever.
It's a great Connery. Don't make me go through all my imitations on the Criterion thing.
That's
we'll go far afield. What do you mean? It's a
some things in here don't react too well to mulch.
Right.
Weak?
Just weak.
Damn it.
But speaking of not weak.
Weak?
No, speaking of not weak, we got Dwight Yule here, ladies and gentlemen.
Dwight Yule, genius.
He was a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous actor. Turned in a tremendous performance here. This role was written, a lot of people ask, how did this guy get in the movie? Because up till now, you know, we've never had any black people in the movie because they make movies about the Jersey suburbs. And I'm sorry, there's no black people out here in the Jersey suburbs. So Dwight was an actor I met by way of Joey Adams, who we'll talk about later on, is in the movie. And Joey's friends with Parker Posey, the actress, the indie actress, who was in every independent movie last year except this one. We take great pride in that. And she was good friends with Dwight, and I met Dwight, hung out with him for one day. I was like, this cat, I got to put this cat in a movie. Now, I said the same thing about this cat once, and I'll never say it again. Just look at a ham take a scene over.
This is where it took a relatively prosaic piece of writing and made it, I'd say, somewhat interesting. And being given the sort of stiff dullard to play in the midst of a field of interesting characters was quite a challenge. I feel I had to make the most of it.
There's a lot of outtakes, which I guess will pop onto the disc later on, of Ben trying to
improvements is what I call them.
Trying to improve, I guess, on what one can't really improve on. Kevin Smith dialogue, class.
Wow. Okay. But there was that cool bit before where he looked right at the camera that I was like.
That's the first of my two Spike Lee shots in this movie. That one I stole straight out of Malcolm X. You'll see a lot of theft in the movie.
We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Little Denzel.
That was supposed to be Denzel. Sounded like Sean Connery.
Yeah, the Rich Little of the 90s. You just come up with impressions.
Please,
they're all terrible.
Don't compare me to that great, great man. I have a little bit of his talent.
We haven't pointed him out, and you know, because we were chatting away. But that's Jason Lee, ladies and gentlemen. Right. There's a cat who's just fantastic in this movie, just fantastic.
He is.
And another in a long line of wacky pals with backwards hats that I hope to continue to write throughout the
Kevin
rest
Smith
of my life.
Staples.
That's right. If he's wacky, he's a pal, and he's got a backwards hat. You can count on the fact that I probably had a hand in that character somewhere. Big moment right here.
Well, isn't that true?
Mm. Huge laugh.
Notice the jams kick in right there?
Yes.
Boom, boom, wah, boom, boom. It's a little porno soundtrack, Kevin.
Now, a lot of people may think that's the first gun in the Kevin Smith movie, but it's not, because we had guns in every movie, but we cut them out. We cut the guns out of Clerks, where Dante got shot by a gun at the end of the movie. We cut the opening half hour of Mallrats, and there were lots of guns in that wacky
stuff. That's where most of my better work was in the beginning of Mallrats, just cut out.
Yeah, we took most of your good stuff out. But I think that's it for the guns. Or
no.
Is it?
No, there was the grappling gun.
Get out of here!
I'm a genius!
How'd you remember that?
You know. It all does to the melons.
Ladies and gentlemen, these things are not staged. Big reveal here is where we find out that we find our first gay character in the movie, the first of many. Too many, one might say. Dwight playing the effeminate Hooper, as opposed to the militant.
Well, Kevin,
Hooper.
You show up later.
Yeah, well, that's the third gay character. A lot of people ask it. I'm going to go into that.
The Jay and Bob kind of Batman and Robin in, you
exactly.
Know, there's talk and no one's ever proved anything.
I didn't want to, you know, there might be some people that haven't seen the flick yet. I didn't want to mention that Jay and Bob.
No.
I wanted to save it as a surprise.
I didn't say they were in this movie.
You just ruined your shit.
That scene's not very good anyway.
And pander to that audience.
Kevin's directing a sequel to Jeffrey later.
First reveal in a View Askew film, I believe.
First camera move in a View Askew movie.
The first of two that appear in this movie. This first one graced upon Joey Lauren Adams, the ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful, wonderful actress former flame, love of my life.
Former Miss America.
Yeah.
Allow me a few minutes to gather my emotions, put them in check. Joey couldn't be here today because we broke up. Because
she dropped Kevin like a bad habit.
No, Joey was supposed to be here today, and she couldn't, though, because she had something else to do. So we'll try to throw in some thoughts for Joey. Just as Jason, we should point out, couldn't be here because Jason's in France shooting a movie, and get this, man, the classy, ever-so-talented Jason Lee is doing lines not only in English, but in French as well.
I didn't know he spoke French.
He's learning, apparently. I didn't know you spoke action. We should point out for the record that you're a cat who took some time off to be here from a little movie called Armageddon, Michael Bay picture, epic, I believe.
Yeah, I fight the bear in that film with great vigor. And it's a lot of action, a lot of fire. Camera moves more in 13 seconds than it does in the entire New Jersey trilogy.
We should probably point out for the record, though, that's a classy move. You're in the midst of a big movie, and you took time out to come here and do the commentary.
Lay it down on wax.
That's
so
why you'll see Ben Affleck in View Askew's next production, Dogma. That's why, because a lot of people ask, like, why Ben Affleck? Why'd you put him in a movie? After
Mara. They do?
Yeah, they do.
You're kidding me.
I kid you not. A lot of people go, he's too big to be a romantic lead. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
I think those people are wrong.
I'll tell you the reason Ben caught my attention the first time, aside from his tremendous acting chops, as they say. He's a cat who he's a very, very decent cat. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people can't really gauge that by his wry commentary on today's tracks, but a very decent guy. He would leave Mallrats from time to time because he was in the midst of a horrible ordeal with Meathead over at Castle Robert on a film called Good Will Hunting, which you just wrapped for Miramax recently.
Yeah, so it's now a Miramax film. It'll be out in December of 1997 at a theater near you.
But whenever Ben left, he would write a little thank you note that was just like, thank you for having me in your picture, and whether it was calculated or not.
Kevin, I don't like to just have sex with people and then leave without any kind of contact. To me, where's the intimacy? I need that.
Yes.
It's interesting that Ben brought up, though, the whole visual style, because if you look at this, you're very big on using static two shots.
Oh, I'm big on the mise-en-scene.
Yeah.
I believe that's what they call it. Scott, isn't that what they call it?
Yep.
Yeah, mise-en-scene.
They call it setting the camera down. Just say my words!
That's all I care about. I mean, a lot of people talk about... a lot of people don't, but I do. A lot of people talk about the lack of visual style I have. There's a few reviews on the movie this time around where people were like, Smith has grown. A lot of people say I grew up and stuff, but they say I still haven't grown or matured as a filmmaker. And for those people, I just got to say, this is it, folks. It don't get any better than this. That reveal shot is as good as it gets.
That was the whole... It was a little Kevin Smith masterpiece.
That was my growth spurt, and... Be happy that we broke into coverage on this movie, because I wanted to just play the whole damn thing.
Should have broken the coverage on this scene, because you've seen some wonderful work done by both actors, but always one or another one of us would have some difficulties. We necessitated about 37 takes of this scene.
It took a lot of takes for this,
but it's a great scene.
It was about to club Kevin in the head by the end.
I enjoy the scene right there. There's a moment I think is one of the most real moments in the flick. Where he's trying, as his character Holden is making some moves,
out jokes,
talking and just playing it his best, and throws out a joke, just doesn't quite work.
Sometimes it doesn't pan out, Kev. You know what I mean?
She goes off to look at the darts or something like that.
She goes another way, but really, you know what? She will be mine.
Look at this. This is a tricky move. Now, what about all those critics of me, my visual critics? I'm throwing darts at the camera. You don't get any more out of the guard than that.
That is zany.
It's wacky. It's like shooting a fireball at the camera.
Right out there on the edge, Kevin. I mean, what?
I'm reinventing,
You're not reinventing. Like, it's a shot from seven, actually. But
that's right.
But interesting thing about this scene is that it was originally much, much longer.
It was. And there was actually a longer cut of the scene, which I believe you can find in the supplemental section of the disc.
But none of my lines got cut, so I think...
No, you're all in there. It's actually a very long story that Joey tells. Quite a beautiful story. A lot of people who've read the script, and you can read the script, it's published out there by Hyperion, Miramax. Folks, pick it up. Or pick it up at Jane Silent Bob's Secret Stash comic book store in Redbeck, New Jersey.
I'm like a whore.
People can pick up the script and find that there's a long story Alyssa tells about why her take on love.
It's actually one of the nice things is people really responded to it, and what a lot of people don't know is that it's something I wrote for Kevin. He asked me, can you put together a story? Can you write something for me?
That was written a long time ago, because that was written among your first notes for Clerks.
It was actually something I was going to include in Clerks. That's right. Because I don't throw anything out.
But there is
Scott Mosier, producer.
Scott Mosier. Flat out making out with this lady.
Grabbing
Kevin wearing a wig on the bottom.
Grabbing some time on Kevin's car. Yeah.
That's right. That was my old neon. And that's Scott's lady, Monica Hampton. A shout out to Monica.
Wait, how'd you throw those darts at the camera?
Hey, what are you talking about?
I don't know how you did darts at the camera without...
We just chucked it at the board.
And they put flat plexiglass over the lens. That's how we did it.
The dartboard's right, like, underneath the camera?
Uh-huh.
Bro, it was 10 minutes ago. Hit, like, the camera, man.
We did a few times.
I drilled
pretty amazing, man. It's dangerous.
Yeah, well, like I said.
Here you go. Here's another, like, three shots.
I wouldn't say this is a very flattering angle for me. I don't know.
No.
I kind of have the gut hanging in the profile. Yeah. That's all right. Just a dude in his t-shirt, just looking, pining after a woman.
Another schmuck.
A very simple Kevin Smith three-shot. I'm probably the flattest visual filmmaker working today.
Spartan visual aesthetic. Yeah,
but there's something really interesting about the whole visual style of Chasing Amy, because I remember originally when this is going to be a much bigger budget film, you talked about shooting in Super 16 for stylistic purposes.
And then
when the budget got cut, you kind of had to anyway.
That's right.
But you wanted to initially.
Which kind of echoed something we did in Clerks. At first we wanted to shoot in black and white, and then we were going to shoot in color, and then for budgetary reasons we ended up shooting in black and white because it was cheaper to process the film. Look at this. This cat just can't draw. He can't act like he's drawing either.
Listen, I did a lot of research with comic book artists, so I've been approached by some of the greats in the comic book business who said, when I saw you drawing at that
name
table...
Name one!
What do you mean, name one? Frank Miller walked up to me on the street and said, I admire you and I respect your work, and you must really draw comics.
Mike Allred, too.
No, Frank, I don't, but this is acting. It's what I do.
Mike Allred also, right?
Yes, also Mike Allred. Thank you, Jason.
Have you ever seen an artist just erase and just wipe pencil all over his...
Scott
knows a few things about drawing.
It's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing to watch. I do know some comic book artists, and I was always embarrassed to show them the movie because of embarrassed about Ben and what he was doing and what he thought he was doing. I don't even want to talk about it.
In my career now, I tell people I don't even know you guys. So I'm like, no, I had a beard in that movie.
Look, that's Bob Hawke playing the guy who's on Hooper's left, and a lot of people didn't understand what was going on in this scene, how Bob keeps reacting and chuckling, and people thought he was in on some joke with Hooper that they were playing on Holden. But
they should
really
know better.
If you look, he's reading a copy of White Hating Coon, Hooper's comic book, and laughing. Because they're two gay guys just chuckling, you know, at the hetero society that don't understand, you know. It happens all the time, I'm told. Gay people just laugh at straight people.
They just laugh at you, Kev.
Well, that too. But, big moment coming up here.
I don't want you messing it up. I care about your shit.
Mm.
I don't hook up myself.
Like, I care about your shit. Ready?
Not that kind of club.
Oh, you like that? That's just a real sitcom Urkel reaction. Just flat
Mitch,
out.
It's because I have to tell the audience this is supposed to be a joke.
This is a huge, huge, huge historic moment in Chasing Amy, because it's probably perhaps one of the only bit of improvised business, as they say, that you'll find in the film. I asked Ben, the performer who's essaying the role of Holden, I asked Ben, give me a simple head move.
And I said, let me put on a clinic, and my clinics are free.
This is what I asked for, watch. That's all I asked for. What does he give me? This. I don't know, Ben. Who is your daddy?
I'm your father, Kevin.
You got just dancing like a minstrel in my film. Trying to tell a serious story about love with some Luke and two line of crew playing in the background. Dude, just dancing
moves. Whoa. Look at that outfit.
And that shirt. Gotta love that net shirt.
Was that Paris dancing with her?
It's Paris Petrick. Extras casting for VSQ, helping us out.
Still
look at
dancing.
That. Just dancing.
Look at him, still moving. Because why? Because he just has the spirit in him. Can you sing for Jesus one time?
Ben just showing off his multi-talents, thinking it's like the 20s when an actor had to sing, dance, and act, and do many things. Nowadays, actors, they just act. But Ben's like, no, I have a majority of talents. I'm like a young James Stewart. He's just moving, ever just moving.
I was like, have you seen me? Have you heard me sing Mammy?
Big moment coming up here. I was a big fan of that. It's probably, I think, the first beer in a Kevin Smith movie, too, in this movie. Lots of beer, a lot of cigarettes. A lot of reviews pointed out all the smoking.
It really came down on us.
It did, because everyone smoked in the cast and crew, and, you know. But I've quit smoking
now
recently,
you quit?
So you won't see many cigarettes in the next flick. If Affleck's like, can I light up in the same? I'd be like, no.
No. And I'd be like, Kevin, just do what I tell you like you did on Chasing Amy when we made some money.
Speaking of which, I mean, a lot of people ask. Yeah, a lot of people don't ask.
Nobody asks.
Nobody does. Ben Affleck, why would you cast that guy in a movie?
Nobody asks you that question. Stop lying. Everyone's like, I see why.
This is a movie, ladies and gentlemen, that kind of came from a movie that came before it, which was called Mallrats. And that's where I met Joey and Jason and Ben, and got to know them, love them very much, respect their talents immensely, and wrote them parts in this movie. So I like to think of Mallrats as a $6 million casting call for Chasing Amy. That's the press soundbite.
It's a good one. And I'm still mowing the man's lawn out of gratitude. But, you know.
The Raj. Liz, does anyone know what that's from?
I think that's from that show with Rerun, isn't it, Kevin?
Yes. No Roger, no Rerun, no Red. That's from What's Happening, Raj.
Yes.
Roger.
Hey.
This is also the big View Askew moment where you tie in all the other films.
We tie the movie firmly into the
tirelessly
universe.
Slugging his other movies. Right. There's one copy of Mallrats at Blockbuster. How many people think are going to rent that movie?
Oh, come on. There's lots of copies of Mallrats.
Dude, you're telling me the cat is very defensive about Mallrats. Be careful around.
There's like five copies at every Blockbuster that are always rented, man.
That's right. Tell him.
I'm not even kidding, dude.
Thinks he knows.
Here comes Gwen Turner.
Gwen Turner.
Who I dated for a long time.
Gwen Turner, the
I know someone that had a big crush.
Writer, Go Fish, actress, Go Fish, lesbian as well. Just, first person I tossed the script to, kind of as a proofread,
not the
outside
first
the Viewaskew inner circle, outside the Viewaskew inner circle, and I tossed the script and I said, could you please check it out, read through it, see, make sure it doesn't sound like a straight guy, you know, writing dialogue for women, let alone lesbian.
And she said, it does sound that way, but go ahead and, you know, shoot it and try to make some money.
Shoot the picture, do what you want. No, but she read it and she said, no, she's gone, everything seems on target, the only thing that seems off is this thing, what is tongue fucking? And I said, I don't know, what is tongue fucking? She's gone, I never heard of it. And she said, I called 10 people, none of us ever heard of it. Who fucks with their tongue? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, we can pull that out. So we pulled it right out.
I do.
That was a really, really long bit.
It was
a swing set scene, actually.
Yes, it happens during the swing set scene.
What am I doing? This is so fucking gay.
It's the funniest moment in the movie. After.
Great moment.
That is.
That and the Frocom that Dwight's got going on.
Oh, there's that line.
It's my moment of shame. It's the only line I wish I'd cut from the movie. She is such a cunt. Unnecessary. Unnecessary vulgarity never helped the movie.
That's never.
My mother told me.
Quite a nice improv.
Helped this movie. It got us all that press.
Oh, shucks.
I remember the first bit of script that you handed me. This scene came at like the 50-page mark.
Oof.
Because that was that draft had so much other stuff going on. It had Holden's ex-girlfriend who was a school teacher. That was
I liked that whole bit, man. I don't know why we lost that.
The bit with her as a school teacher?
Yeah,
your other chick.
Yeah, I thought there was be some more brawl.
Too close to home, I think. Too close to home. Because I date school teachers, I guess. I don't know. It was a long movie, for heaven's sake. We'll talk about the first draft in a couple minutes. Right now, I think we should point out this song, written by the actress, Joey Lauren Adams.
And a great song.
It's a really catchy tune. A lot of people ask, where's the soundtrack? I just want to hear Joey's song, but there was no soundtrack. We screwed the pooch on that one. But,
Look at me. I love it. Yes, there's a connection.
Mugging, like a 60-year-old
mugging. That's real. That's me knowing that there's a connection. Right now, Holden's thinking, yeah, she's looking at me, and later on, when we're making love, and we're at home, we're sharing, we're going to look back, and she's going to say, I felt it when I was on stage. It was for you. And I was going to say, yeah, I knew it too.
So about the song, Joey, she composed originally as a country ditty. She's very fond of country music. I don't know if anyone knows that about her. But it wouldn't quite work as a country tune, you know.
Unless we most threw a country
hay
tunes
on the
don't
floor
work.
In the bar and a mechanical bull, which would have changed the scene a bit. But the dynamics, I think, would be completely different. A lot of people thought this could be an urban cowboy from the 90s, but we went another way.
kind of a rhinestone for the 90s.
So I asked her, I said, Joey, can we torch it? Can we, you know, kind of torch the song up? And we sat down with Scott Angley, good buddy, who did some music for us on Clerks. And he kind of composed something a little slower, something a little more breathy. And
that's why you made $1,500 for being the director on this movie, Ken.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Look at that. Oh, yes.
A guy just grabbing his chest like a woman.
What other actor would do that for you in the film? Humiliate himself for the film.
And this other girl, of course, is Carmen Lee.
Carmen Lee, Jason's wife, plays the girl right there in front of Ben, who's
she's tough
vying
to miss.
For Joey's attention. Very tough to miss. Big moment in the movie right here. Got to point out, this is a moment that kind of I owe a little bit to Victor Victoria for Blake Edwards' movie. I know the Cine East will attack me for that. I should be quoting Godard and Romer, but here I am just kind of lifting from Blake Edwards' catalog. Blake
That's
Edwards.
Awesome. I thought we were going to do a whole glow-in-the-dark condom thing, and that didn't pan out.
Look at that, Ben, 25 pounds lighter. Right there, that shot. If you notice, we did that way later. It's called a pickup in the movie business.
That's a professional movie term.
Big moment right here. You see how Jason's looking around and sees two women kissing, right? But then he looks here and he sees two women talking. And that's when he realizes. That was intentional. I just have to point that out for the record.
That's too funny.
Great moment, right?
Hot.
Because Lee has what you call a $1 million smile. When that kid smiles and it's timed right,
genius.
Money in the bank.
That handsome look confuses the hell out of people later
watch
on.
Watch Ben's very ham-handed acting move here as he covers his face with his hand. Oh, God, what?
That was you told me to do that. You were like, indicate. Will you cover your hand? I was like, well, who would do that? And you were like, just do it. It doesn't matter.
Kevin has completely demystified your performance.
I know. Kevin's like,
he had all these nuances. Who needs that?
He's like, no, just
loud.
Grab your face like that kid in the house all by himself.
No subtlety, man. Who needs subtlety? Big scene right here. If you do Q&As for this movie, as I have often than last year, you have two type of people asking you questions about this scene. The first, and really it illustrates the differences in ages and how many movies people have seen. People who are about 17 and under say, that scene, did you get that from Lethal Weapon 3? And people who are about 18 and over, of course, recognize this scene
Jaws.
As a lift from Jaws. Steven Spielberg's brilliant, brilliant Jaws. And I believe the lamp that hangs over their heads, the little light fixture.
Yeah.
I was told, is that true, that it was the light fixture used in Jaws?
I mean, it is the light, the type.
The
it's
type.
Not the actual light fixture. We're not quite there. But the whole thing was created that the light boxes were there to sort of make it look like the ocean and the placement of the windows and the booth and everything. Yeah. They actually took a photograph from a laser disc of the movie and then tried to recreate the look of it.
And
can you tell?
Yeah. People who read the first draft of the Mallrats screenplay recognized this scene from that.
That's right, because this was a scene that I originally had written in the first draft of Mallrats, Scott's favorite draft of Mallrats, the one that to this day is like, we should have made that, we'd have been millionaires. But we went a different way and made a studio picture. But yeah, this scene was it took place in the food court, and it was a discussion between T.S. Brody and at one draft
Shannon Hamilton.
No, it was Hooper.
It was a cat named Hooper, but also there was another draft.
Then we changed it to Jay.
It was Jay, and then we were going to make Jay's last name Hooper because it was so important that the conversation would be between Brody, T.S., whose last name was Quentin Hooper.
You could have just cast Jay as a gay black guy.
We tried, but cat just wouldn't read.
Sick as a dog, worked into the ground.
And this has probably one of your most arty moves in the film, where you cut to the black and white flashes, which actually work really well.
The sepia type things.
Yeah,
that was Dave was actually kind of surprised. Dave Klein, our brilliant cinematographer, the man who's been with us, Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy, shocked when I was like, can we shoot that in black and white? He was like, what? Something even halfway artistic? I'm shocked. Look at that. A great Lee hand move. Lee's wonderful. He has wonderful arms and hands, and when he uses them in the movie, it's cool. Look at that.
You should watch that, Ben. Try it.
Try to learn something. It's like a little robotic thing, a little mime.
You have a great, great piece of delivery coming up here. You do.
Me?
Yes.
What do I do?
Watch.
Constant updates. You are such an idiot.
That's tremendous. What do you attribute the wonderful chemistry between you and Jason Lee for the movie? Because in Mallrats, I mean, you actually knew Lee on Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, I knew him, but I didn't know that he was such a good actor. And then I saw him in Mallrats, and I was like, this guy's going to be huge. This movie is going to be huge.
In Mallrats, you just beat his ass in a hallway. That's that, and then later on the stage, you just... It's funny, if you watch this movie, and you watch Mallrats right before to right after, the chemistry is completely different.
Yeah. It's because I was... Well, for one thing, we rehearsed for about 10 weeks, 15 weeks before we shot the movie. We
rehearsed for a month.
And in addition to that, I just was always a really big fan of his and really wanted to work with him because I thought the guy was so funny in Mallrats, just so brilliant with his stuff. So I was psyched when I thought like it was going to be me with him. Ooh, there's the black and white thing.
Yeah, that's... the day we were shooting that, man, the girl who played the body double or the body in that shot.
You should have seen Kevin casting naked women coming in and out all day.
There was no, everyone kept their gear on, but for that scene, the camera kept picking up clothing, so the clothing had to keep rising north and south until finally the girl was, and that's the same girl right there, yeah. Marina Tartavita.
The gear was
basically gone. Had her gear lifted high and low, and we were all trying to be like,
gentlemen.
You're about it, a gentleman, but it's so hard. So hard. That's the thing about the movie business. You see a lot of naked chicks.
Scumbag like you, it's hard to resist.
Yeah, God,
Kevin's a notorious kind of ladies' man in Hollywood.
Is it intentional that you don't see any of... Oh, you do see one of his flashes, okay. It's just like you see more of the lesbian flashes than his.
Mm-hmm. No. They're more interesting, you know what I mean?
This is a classy shot coming up right here, man. Because it takes you a couple seconds to understand what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
See, there's a head going up and down in the bottom of the frame. It's our graduate shot.
Wow. All I can say is wow.
All right. You're hot, and we escaped with an R, dude.
Amazing.
No NC-17 on this picture.
But there was initially speculation that it might.
Yeah, we were terrified.
Sundance.
Yeah, Amy Tobin pointed out in The Village Voice that we might be ripe for an NC-17, being that our first movie almost got an NC-17 for language.
I put a couple calls to the lawyer. Motion picture rating board.
We did. Who was our Miramax?
You had Alan Dershowitz.
That's right. We had the Dersh, man.
Oh. He put a lot of work into it, didn't he?
I think we met the guy once, and he defended our case, I guess.
Billed you for $200,000.
In the O.J.
He was knee-deep in the O.J. trial, and the dude came for the press conference, and then the trial at the actual hearing or the screening, we were represented by a Miramax lawyer, John Locke.
I think the airfare to the hearing was more than the movie cost.
That bit with Holden's arm.
Yep, that's the Brody moment from
would have been a nice insert, time to shoot some coverage there, but I guess not.
Watch this. Here's the scene. We cut away right here.
30 in the morning. And rush hour starts in 6 hours. Let's go.
Because Ben gave the delivery perfectly on somebody else, on their coverage.
And because I was like, what is... I mean, this scene, is so like, obvious. Who says this?
There's something missing. And so all the coverage of that and pan out. But the delivery was over their footage, and I just loved it so much.
That line is hysterical.
Yeah, when I'm grabbing a smoke, looking at people, I remember some people at Miramax said, like, why does she look so angry when they leave?
Yes, we wanted you to find a happier shot. I guess it didn't exist.
Potzer.
First time we hear the word Potzer in the movie,
yeah,
which we directly stole from Searching for Bobby Fischer. You hear it two more times in the flick. Watch this guy fix his hair.
The rock has to be in order, bro.
I mean, it kills me, man. It looks like a rug. Speaking of Shatner, that just flat out looks like a rug right there.
Bro, if you had sprung for a hairstylist, you know?
Budget, an issue we'll probably have to get to in a couple seconds.
I love his dialogue here. It's so funny.
It is mad. Listen to this. Again, his hands. Just wonderful with his hands.
Bullshit posture.
So expressive.
Live and let live, I guess. I'm sure the gay community appreciates
yourself. You can actually see the grain.
Brilliant delivery. This is a cat that just knows how to fucking deliver my dialogue, Ben Affleck. Brian O'Halloran, back again. Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy. And beside him,
Matt Damon of Good Will Hunting, co-wrote with me and a friend of all of ours.
Matty Damon, a cat. You'll be seeing
sporting
a lot more.
Sporting a Clooney hairdo and a nice tight t-shirt.
Yes. That was our idea of how MTV execs look. Even though we've met many. Actually, we kind of modeled them after Mike DeLuca over at New Line. I think that was the idea.
Matt is going to be?
Matt will be in Dogma. You'll see Matt and Ben paired up. And Dogma as the life mates they are.
Life partners, Kevin.
Right here, big scene. I remember we did this 9 takes, and she just got happier and happier every take we did this. She loved doing this, and it just got better and better. She loved putting in the hand movements. We talk about her like she's dead because in my heart she is. No, but she did a tremendous job. Tremendous job right here in this scene.
Yeah, that's the segue into the music is really nice.
Cut out my best reaction to the film. It's all right, though.
This is one of the first
day
days.
Of shooting.
First day of shooting.
This shot.
First thing you shot.
Was this the first thing?
Yeah, that's the first thing.
We
shot. No.
Very first thing we shot.
This was shot that shot very first.
Because it was going to be a steady cam, and then you decided
that's
to
right. I just wander out of the frame at some point.
Yeah, but right before, right after you deliver your last line. Look, she's out for your line.
Yeah, because
you're by yourself, dude. You own the frame. You say your line. You're
yes!
out of the clip.
Yes!
With a fucking hot dog in your mouth. Again, more symbolism for what's to come at the end of the film, where you're like, we must all blank, blank.
It's a very overcast day, I remember.
It was actually cold. Drizzling.
It's an overcast picture.
Yeah. It's undercast. All right, but a bump.
There was a lot cut from. Well, there's a big cut from the beginning of this scene.
There was. There's a heck of a lot more dialogue actually with her.
Bunch of lesbian dialogue.
And there's that Harrison Ford line, which was great, which you delivered
that was
quite
so
well.
Funny.
Where she asks her, "Have you ever been attracted to any men?" And you say, Harrison Ford, our mailman.
It was funny. I don't know why you cut out the best stuff in the movie, really. You made a lot of very poor decisions with it. Anytime you remove some of my stuff, I consider it extraordinarily poor decisions.
The first time we showed this cat some cut footage, he was weeping. He was so happy. You kept that? Oh. I'm so glad you cut the other things. Right now, I mean, it's probably the best time to talk about budget because this shot is so sparse. But actually, we use natural location pretty well. Made it look pricey, gave it some scope, as they say. Scott, how much did this movie cost us, by the way?
Well, Kevin, to get it all in the can and start editing is about $200,000. We were cutting it on Avid, so it was about $250 to get to first cut, but it was just over $200.
Super 16.
Dirty D's, none dirt cheap.
Had Affleck running the craft table.
Wearing all my own clothes in the movie, mind you.
Most of the crew were free.
Clothes that got stolen.
Yeah, Ben got some clothes stolen that we never got.
That's why not only am I wearing my own clothes, but I'm wearing like the kind of clothes you usually only reserve for when all your other shit is dirty. You know what I mean? So it was my real JV outfits that I was wearing.
JV. Joey, you and Joey had pretty decent chemistry. There's some reviews that said you didn't, but
those
reviews.
People are fools and they know nothing. If they were here now, I'd beat them about and box their ears for them, straighten them right out.
Remember, you got a few flicks coming out, dude. You don't want to be bashing.
No, I'm not naming names. A lot of people wrote some extraordinarily thoughtful reviews on this piece.
You might want to say a few things about Joey.
Joey was actually, despite what you and your black heart may be feeling, Joey was a really terrific. A lot of fun to work with and really spirited and spunky. Most actors are like really boring and just kind of, you know, they're just sort of interested in being who everyone else wants them to be, whereas Joey was very like fiercely independent, had personality, and made these scenes of two people just sitting on swings talking in a two shot, I think, work.
Typical moments in a Kevin Smith film. Joey, the wonderful thing about Joey is she was she's very easy to direct sometimes. There were times though, of course, where we were dating in the movie and we confused our roles as boyfriend, girlfriend, and director and actress. Mm.
I remember
say,
those
why?
Times fondly.
Yeah, do you remember that?
I remember how I was slept at Kevin's house, as a matter of fact, in making this film.
Flat out on the couch.
On the couch and played some Sega. So occasionally mom and dad would be upstairs having a spat.
I'd be like, well, I'll be down here playing some Sega hockey if you want to join me.
The infamous tongue shot.
Tongue shot written because Joey's tongue is so large. I don't know, is that really big, though?
Wasn't that the same reason we wrote in the whole package shot for me? But then that would have got us an NC-17.
It's huge. The horse cock scene, I believe we called it.
This is very funny, just that I can't get up right now.
Thank you, Vincent. I appreciate that.
Listen to this. Brilliant, brilliant. A little bit of voiceover right here.
ADR, right?
Just flat out hired Charles Schulz. I think one of the funniest lines in the movie.
Thank you, Kevin. That was another one of my additions.
Here it is. We talked about it before. This is not a train station. It's a hallway of an office building.
And barely that.
Yeah.
And we set it up that day and shot it. But something happened that day, didn't it, Scotty?
Well, there was a little trouble. We're not going to get into that right
now. Yeah, okay.
There's some bad trouble.
You see, it's a train station. There's a sign that says track 4.
Another technical thing, though. This shot, I mean, every time I've seen this in the theater, this has been severely misframed. Or they were cutting off the tops of their heads, and you can actually see it all here.
Well, that's because it's Criterion.
Yeah, exactly.
Criterion.
And this shot.
The laser disc. Yeah. Laser disc! DVD.
This shot originally opened with the makeshift crane shot that you tried to do with the Steadicam and the big ramp, but then it just.
Had no goddamn money.
It was very poor.
And Dave ran.
Look, we got a train. Production value.
That's production value. And really, it just so happened that a train track runs along outside that building.
Yeah. That's the kind of. That's a real filmmaker's phenomenon. There's not a single person in the world who ever noticed that there was a train, but everyone in this room's like, see, we got a train in the movie.
We were as happy to get that train as we were to get Ileana Douglas, who also got cut out of the movie later on. But, you know, it just really helps.
But also, this scene was, they had that smoke machine when they kept smoking up the set, I guess, for atmosphere.
Well, trains, when trains pull out, supposedly steam or smoke comes out.
It's the nicest shot in the movie, really, in a lot of ways.
Beautiful. This is shot in my office, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Not in New Jersey, in New York. I mean, not in New Jersey, not New York, because the scene takes place in New York. But
probably a long lens. What are the longest lens you use in this thing? It looks like about
it's very soft, very...
A fight and a half to get her to wear that jersey, though.
Looks great.
Doesn't it? Nothing sexier than a woman in a jersey.
And there's a little kid.
Very controversial moment.
Why so?
That was a very controversial
This
moment.
One right here?
With the kid? With the porn? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we thought so, but there was never... I mean, Amy Tobin pointed out in The Village Voice, she thought that's why we'd get the NC-17 showing a kid, you know, a woman mounting a horse. Supposedly
Kevin was like, I do that every day at the laundromat in the park.
Art imitates life. I show children naughty photos constantly.
There was a little tail end of this scene that got cut as well.
Where Jason interacts with a conductor.
Which is a very funny scene, but just was originally written, I believe, to be in an airport, and since the production dictated that we couldn't get an airport, it was supposed to be a skycap, and it just didn't work as well with a
this
train skycap.
Yeah,
here we go, listen, here comes the second use of
huge
the
mistake.
Word Potser.
Potser?
Again.
You should have never looped his scene.
Bobby Fischer.
Yeah.
Why?
That was a hate looping. You should use production.
It irritates
me.
It sounds natural. Never sounded like looped to me. It sounded really great.
I know it's looped and it bothers me.
That's a real filmmaker. I'm about right there. I know it's looped. Everyone knows. Everyone can. Nobody can tell it's looped.
This scene originally took place a little later. I mean, there was. What did they actually do initially here?
I thought in one draft I had them fucking all out. Didn't they? Probably not.
Until after. I mean, this was later on in the script, and then you moved everything around in the editing.
Yes, what happened before this scene was a scene that we were going to see later on that was cut.
Yeah, the
Ileana
Douglas.
Of them playing video games, the very famous faggot video game scene where Banky says faggot like a...
Was it the scene where she had the leather on and I was like spanking her and I was like, you're a bad dog.
That's right.
Here comes my big cameo, the one that made the trailer.
Yeah, that's right. Vinny's other big cameo, other than the shot of you as the cop at the convention.
Oh, this place is like Spanish Rock.
And this is another scene that was
the slowest
much
arcade
longer.
On the Jersey Shore. There's about 3 customers in there. It's supposed to be a Friday night.
We only had so many friends. So
Speedball, though, phenomenal. When we showed this, look at this. There's Vincent. Physical comedy. Sells it. When we showed this overseas, people were just like, Skee-ball, what is the Skee-ball?
And the Germans really didn't get it. Here we go, love montage. We understand the love montage.
Look at those birds. One would think we had them caged and released them, but it was just
random pigeons.
What it was. You know, getting your girlfriend to wear ponytails in the movie, it's always a big thing.
This was the other reshoot. I was thinner here, too. This was shot 6 months after we finished the movie.
That's my little cousin, also wearing ponytails. Some people didn't understand the shot. Ben, we're going to have Ben reading The Village Voice, but he cried because they reviewed Glory Days and called him a young Ethan Hawke, so he demanded to be reading Time Out magazine in that shot. Like the prima donna fucking actor that he is, or actress.
We've since reconciled.
Yeah, he's happy with The Village Voice. One good review later. Titty cake, Joey and I baked this. We actually baked it.
That's really touching, Kev.
Thanks. For the crew that day, and then we tried to jam the shot in. Dave was all unhappy about it, too.
Here's this scene, which was much longer, and actually led into the skee-ball scene.
Which you'll see later on. You'll see this in the context of the whole scene later on. But yeah, this scene was much longer. But ooh, love that moment. He's always getting hit. Banky's just always getting smacked.
It's the last time.
That's it. It's a great line. It always makes me laugh.
See, this is a real JV sweater. You know what I mean? I don't even wear this in real life.
This moment here, some people, if you're not a smoker, I don't think you don't get it.
You wouldn't get it, yeah.
Because, you know, when lighters went childproof, they're so hard to light for some people. And
another
reason. Bites it.
Right there, Joey's wearing a JLA jacket, my JLA jacket.
And we're right down the street from Miramax.
And we're down the street from Miramax.
Maybe the first big dramatic moment of the film coming up here.
I think you're right.
This is where the turn starts, where the segue is, into something a little bit more elegant than what Kevin's really capable of. So he brought
the
it some
The dick and fart jokes are still there, but we can also come in with a bit of class.
Also, there was one of the biggest camera moves he ever did, which never made it into the movie.
That's right.
It was a Brian De Palma camera move.
Mm. Yeah, a dolly. It was a circular dolly, wasn't it?
Called the pie shot.
You're a mad dog.
What was that?
It was when Jason stands up later on, and we circle around him. I guess it's kind of pointless to talk about it when we're never going to see it, but we circle around him and kind of...
Here when he stands up.
Yes, after this, but again, we're not going to see it. So
one of many things that didn't pan out.
No, it just didn't happen.
No, just because you're working for a budget, you know, and the budget's kind of low. Another thing happened, just as good, maybe.
Here's a scene here that
brings the house down.
Yeah, it's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Huge comedic beat. And this is actually also a much longer scene as well afterwards, but we cut it in half at the behest of people like John Gordon, Miramax.
But this is one of the scenes...
But are you happy now?
I'm ecstatic.
Are you gonna?
I owe you a beer.
But are you going to put it in the disc, the longer version?
I think we'll include that in, perhaps.
This is definitely a scene where, like, you have to have Jason Lee to deliver this, or it's half as good. He can do this like nobody else. So this little drawing thing.
Well, what Jason does quite well is play coiled spring. Jason plays coiled spring like no other actor on the planet. Now, the real drawings are done by Uber artist Scott Mosier. The fake drawings that Jason's doing are done by Jason himself.
And resemble stick figure bunnies, figure lesbians.
And somebody pointed out that look at that rabbit. It doesn't look a thing like a rabbit. We go ahead and cut to the close up on it. Some people pointed out that no human being could draw that whole drawing. I think it was Bob said no human being could draw that fast.
But it's a time cut.
It's a time cut. It's one of those things.
It's got the guitar stings.
How did it dissolve?
Over here, we have a male, affectionate, easy to get along with, non-political
agenda. Lesbian. See, Lee has that lilting lesbian.
It takes work, man.
Rage, bitter, dyke. You see, with the hand and the flow.
He works it. He works.
Bring it up.
You can actually see the grain of the film in that, man. Now, that's a sharp transfer.
Yeah.
Blazing Super 16 Origins.
The name that means quality.
Wait a minute. Do I get a free disc? I love Criterion, too.
$100 bill first. See, in the background on the wall, you see some artwork hanging up there, some Matt Wagner Mage pages, some Grendel pictures.
Hold on, this is that Dirk
Cobb. Awesome.
Figments of your fucking imagination!
Genius.
I'll be hiding from your fucking shit.
Right here, that line, I'll be hiding from your fucking shit in my room. There's a whole bit in there, which you can see later on the disc, that we cut out.
And substituted that off-camera line for.
Yeah, we pretty much summed it all up.
It's really a way to sink an actor's ship. I'm playing this whole thing like I think we've just had the 2-minute scene beforehand. Kevin's like, no, just say you're hiding in your room.
Meanwhile, we went from a lot of this film was shot on a Steadicam, because we had a Steadicam for the whole shoot, but we're back to handheld here.
Will Holden ever fuck Melissa?
My other favorite part.
Oh, what a shock. Not fucking,
likely. I really... Watching Jason Lee makes you want to play his part because he's so awesome. I just had to stand there and suck it all up in this...
No, what would you say? Would you trash 20 years of fucking friendship because you've got some idiotic
notion? I mean, to deliver six paragraphs of heavy, burdensome dialogue like...
Let it go. All that important?
Because
I'm fucking in love with her, man, okay?
Bang.
Very static.
There it is.
You know, that's the thing. The camera work here, not Dave's fault, the director's fault. Very static. Those performances bring the frame to life.
Yeah, it's static.
It makes it seem like the movie is going somewhere, when in reality, we're just,
nowhere. Going nowhere.
This movie's kind of we're chasing its tail, I believe some reviews said.
It's static, but the handheld adds that little edged you with are the there, medium, you know?
That you are there type moment. Here's that moment right there where Ben was staring at Joey with something he actually brought up. He said, I want to do this. I want to start the scene just kind of looking at her before I go into my line. And we were rushed for time because we were trying to get this shot because the diner was
kicking us out of the diner.
Because we had broken some shit, and supposedly. But you know, Ben's like, I need a few moments at the beginning of the scene. And I was like, come on, damn it. We're on the move. But it made all the difference. If you watch that, he's checking her out. He's just, you know, he's sizing her up. He's
one
feeling the things he speaks about later.
Every 35 suggestions fans out.
Isn't
this is
Rip
Torn's son.
Yeah.
Would you hate to be this dude right now?
It's just like, I'm not Tony, I'm Rip Torn's son.
Yeah, it's Tony Torn. Wonderful job. Just happens to be Rip Torn's son.
Geraldine Page, too.
Yes.
Was his mom.
So there's a class pedigree to this.
This scene was a little longer, too, and it was even longer in the first draft. It went on for a really long time where they were haggling over the price.
We scaled it back
a bit. That was a big mistake. Yeah. It was really, really boring and uninteresting in that very first draft, and now it's somewhat better.
Bring the Dyshevsky down off the wall, please.
My new Dyshevsky.
The rain scene, as we call it. What many consider to be the turning point of the film. We got hints of it in the scene before, but now is where we play for keeps.
We got a little tiny hose on the roof of this car pissing water on the windshield, so that's the extent of our rain for this section.
This is also a shot that you've done. You did it in Clerks, and it's a throwback to this.
There's a scene that we cut that you'll see at the end of the disc, too, where we go back and forth like this.
It's easy, it's quick,
it's my way, it's my signature.
Just ask the ladies.
As long as you can hear my dialogue, that's all that matters.
Yep.
Scotty's truck, we gotta point out.
Yeah, and I'll have you know, the rain looked fine. Like, so a lot of people worked really hard, put in a lot of hours to like try and do this shit.
This is cool.
We have a rain machine in a $200,000 movie. Is that remarkable or what? Happened to be people just turning hoses on out their windows.
What could we possibly say about this speech?
Tour de force. Some actors give, and some actors give. The third one would be Ben Affleck.
What am I?
Ben gave us four, I believe, completely different takes on this speech.
Which ones did you use? There's two different takes cut together, right?
Here's the one where you cry like a woman because I just wanted to flatter you for the public. No, I used the majority of the one take.
The one take, yeah. It was the second one, I think.
So many people mentioned this scene to me. They mentioned Ben and how this scene affected them. And
the writing also is just brilliant. You get a chance as an actor to do something like this. It's wonderful.
Also was this scene at Sundance. I'm probably the only one here who sat through all three screenings at Sundance. But when this scene came on, it was so thrilling to hear all of the laughs earlier in the film. Explosive laughter that sometimes covered up dialogue. But the silence during this scene and a few other scenes told me that this movie was going to be something more. You know, there's silences where people just sit there like dead fish, or there's a lot of rustling and people going to the bathroom. But during some scenes in the second half of Amy, you could hear a pin drop, and that thrilled me more than the biggest laughs that we got at those three sold-out screenings were.
Oh, yeah.
The silences.
Me, too. It was the first time I was actually looking forward to silence in the film. Usually, you know, it's a
sign
you're doing something wrong, but this film, no, especially at this moment.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, oddly enough, a lot of guys really dug on this speech.
Really?
I can't tell you how many people say, like, I bought the book so I can do that speech to this chick I like.
You know? It's great, because they want you to, like, stuff arranged. Like, you work for him, he could just shoot a lesbian.
Exactly. There's some guys out there hitting on lesbians with this speech right now. Guys, it doesn't pan out. It's a movie. It's a fictional reality.
They stop watching at side one, I think.
But a lot of people say, like, oh, this is a speech I always wanted to say to this chick, and I never heard the word.
This is the point where, like, you realize it's such a brilliantly written speech is the way that he wraps it up and ties it back into the beginning at the end.
Yeah.
The way he goes back to the painting is just so circular.
And I remember when we were shooting the scene, Joey was crying. when you were delivering it. When we were doing your coverage, she was crying as you were delivering it. And I was like, you can't cry in the scene. And when we do your coverage, she's like, no, but I just can't help it. It's so, like, so damn touching.
She was really great to
work
with.
She works so damn hard in the scene. I mean, it's
hard.
The speech you deliver is fantastic, but cutting to her is just, it really lays it down there for somebody who's just so completely fucking blown away by what she's being told, what she's hearing.
Yeah, she did a great job. She's really made it easy to work with her.
There it is. That one makes it.
And the glassy eyes, man.
Yeah.
There's a cat, too. I mean, unfortunately, we cut away, and you don't know if he's dropping a Visine in there. I could tell you, it was a man who was there. He was not. It was a man who just got glassy.
And this is the cathartic moment for the audience. Everyone lets out a little laugh here. Makes them
comfortable.
Here comes the music.
Use great little piece of music Dave Perner found popped in there.
What are you doing?
Get back in the car and get out of here.
Now this scene, unfortunately, we had to loop.
Yeah,
but it works.
It works quite well, but we did have to loop it because the sound in the rain was.
But we worked pretty hard, and this scene you can't really tell is looped. I don't think.
No, not in the least.
Joey did a great job looping. She's got the majority of the dialogue.
Yeah.
You can see my jacket get more and more wet, too, in this scene.
So, I mean, you know, people change.
Oh, it's that simple.
Huge moment for her. I think this is the moment for a lot of people who've watched Joey's movies through the years where they kind of have a new, they walk away with a new respect. And this is the first time you see Joey Adams doing some really hardcore, serious acting and pulling it off in spades.
Yeah.
And the first of three big scenes that she has, really, tour de force.
Where she really shows a bunch of different kind of colors and personality, and it's really what makes this three-dimensional character.
She doesn't even seem so much angry here as if she's just so confused and...
Well, she's fighting herself in the
turmoil
scene.
About it.
Took it. She's really making an argument for
it. And this ending... This scene is almost surreal with...
Go home, Holden.
With the garbage in the background.
Music and the rain and the camera moves, the handheld camera. Especially when he's walking back and the music starts up again.
Where'd you shoot this at?
It's right by our place, dude.
Mechanic Street.
Our apartment. We know we come up the street and turn, make a left into the parking lot. This is where we shot.
That's the bank right there?
That building. That,
like, Jack's music shop.
Jack's is there.
And there's I hate to point it out.
Yeah, there's a reflection in the windows. You can see the camera crew. Everyone always points that out.
The color palette in this scene is unbelievable. And it's very much like a French film.
That double cut there. Very slight double cut.
Very, very tiny.
With that music.
Big moment.
Watch, he puts his hand on her butt.
Finally got to kiss Kevin's girlfriend.
What was this?
He puts his hand on her butt. Watch.
No, shut up, Muse. What are you doing? I never noticed that.
This is Jason Muse, and over here on my right, I have Vinny and Kevin and Bob and Scott and John and Ben. And we're here doing conscientary.
We're all here on the right.
You're all making it sound like it needs a scrap or what.
That was great, man.
Thanks for the intro, dude. This is a morning scene. Usually what happens in mornings, little breakfast, lunch, and what?
Dinner.
Breakfast, lunch, and what?
Dinner.
Big moment right here. Dropping of the chocolate milk. Always a huge, significant moment in any film.
A little bit of, visual filmmaking from Kevin.
Notice how, no nudity here. Just a bare back.
Tasteful.
Very sexy. Tastefully done.
A little bit of armpit.
If you see Ben's got yellow on his shirt, it's because and you look at those cuts before of things lying around the apartment. Apparently the night before, being that they're artists, quit kissing my lady, dude. Apparently since they're artists, they had a wild night of passion. Sex, these two unleashed spirits, and they were body painting one another.
See how she's wearing underwear? That was a real Kevin directive.
What, the boxers?
Yeah.
You refer to her wearing boxers in the scene, dickhead. That's why she's wearing
them. Oh, that's right.
Thanks for trying to sink my fucking boat, dude.
I tried.
Give a brother a part. Here's a scene that Ben... Bob, when you first watched this coverage, weren't you swore you saw Ben's dick through his...
It was my balls. I did. Or is... something down there.
Excuse for
Bob. That was your imagination.
Yeah. I saw your package.
No, when I first saw the scene, I was like, "That's a mighty cramped doorway to try to squeeze these two guys into." I always thought they looked very uncomfortable.
Try squeezing your nuts into
scene.
A pair of boxers like that.
Look at the cheerleaders, man.
Yeah,
they're pretty hot. Little cheerleaders, but they're young. Why'd you pick older ones?
They were in a class that I was teaching.
Oh,
acting class I was teaching up at Hudson that year.
Kevin's, the extent of Kevin's acting class, he's like, just say it how I tell you to say it.
A lot of people say my line reading approach to directing actors, it just doesn't pan out, but I present to you Chasing Amy, ladies and gentlemen. This is actually probably the first movie that I didn't really give you guys many line readings on. I was there for rehearsals, of course I had tweaked, but I trusted you guys.
Yeah, there was some more freedom. There was some trust with the actors, which was rather extraordinary.
Because you can't give a line reading to tears, you know. I can't say cry.
Well, you could. You know,
I've tried. Didn't quite pan out. This is a very strong moment for Jason. Jason's first dramatic moment in the film. This was always a favorite of yours, Bob, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I love this scene. Just, and it is about friendship. It's one of your subjects of the film, but this is the heart of it in the film. This is what it's all about, and I love the quietness.
Very quiet scene.
Very
ironically
underplayed.
Enough, though, not quiet the day we were shooting it. There were road construction going on, I believe, Scott.
Well, he's playing with his hands too much. He's fiddling too much with his fingers.
True. Who's fiddling?
Jason.
Jeez.
Critiquing a performance?
Also,
Pauline Kael?
You know, a lot of acting is listening, and Ben listens beautifully in this scene. He gives such support to Jason.
Ben's a follower. I've always been saying he's not quite a leader.
See how Bob can match his one time he says, "Hey, I saw your nuts," but also he looks above it. He's an even-handed approach. Thank you, Bob.
The girl scene. This was a scene that you might recognize a familiar face. And the actress' name,
Joey Adams.
She's Walker White. What was that?
Walker White from Goodfellas, the girl with the hat.
The hat
girl
from Goodfellas.
She's the babysitter.
Right. And she was actually married. She is married to the guy who played the lawyer we see in the cut footage at the end of the disc.
Damien Young.
Damien. This scene was somebody suggested I include a scene that showed Alyssa in her environment.
Was that John?
A studio exec from a completely different studio, Nina Jacobson, over at
DreamWorks.
She was our exec on Mallrats when she was at Universal, and she read the script, and she said, she's going, you should really show her in her element. You see the boys in their world all the time. So I came up with this scene, and this is probably the scene was the lightning rod for the criticism of the flick, because people felt that it was inauthentic or something like that, because her friends get mad at her, you know, when she says that she's seeing a guy. There's a much different cut of this where some of the friends get so enraged they storm out, and we cut that back. Thank God,
like that.
We'd have been butchered, we'd been killed by the critics.
I lobbied for that.
Although some of that turned up in the trailer.
Yes, there's actually a piece that turns up in the trailer. Oh, Alyssa, no, not
give
you
some lovely footage. There's
a
mirror match.
You're dating a guy. Yeah. And give some credit too.
I said, that's what happens when you just give footage to Miramax. You never know what comes back. You know what I mean? These guys, they'll do anything.
Step up, John.
You want to know something? If we didn't do that, sessions like this wouldn't happen. This is another valuable source of income and revenue.
Yeah, how come I don't see any
pregnant pause? There's Paris.
I love that hairdo.
Very important figure in Vioskew, actress casting Paris.
Where'd you get these other girls from?
Some cook casting. You know, Paris, I mean, you know, we know her, right?
Yeah, but the other three
came from some light auditionings we had, and very closed audition, but we also got Tony Torn.
This is my favorite scene in the film.
You like this?
Yes.
It's a classy scene. It's a
quiet moment.
I don't talk enough.
Ben, but you perform. You're there for her. This is Joey really shines in this moment, in this scene right here, and this to me was the
linchpin against criticism of the film, where there were some people that maintained that this movie was like a 16-year-old boy's fantasy. That
who said that?
You know, some knuckleheads out there. But they maintained that all I was saying with this film was that all a lesbian needs is one guy to turn around, one good stiff one to turn around.
That's not what we're saying?
Shut up. Damn it.
Really?
No, not at all. And we have the buffoon character, Banky, say that in the movie to deflate that argument.
Oh, but, I thought Banky was the hero.
Just a completely different take on the movie. But this scene is important because what she's saying is basically why she's justifying to Ben or Ben's character, but more to the audience why she is where she is right now. Because a lot of people are, oh, you know, you have this a lesbian jump in the sack with a guy. And if you listen to the scene very closely, which if you're listening to this commentary, you're not listening to the scene very closely, so go back and listen to it. What she says is very important. It illustrates why she's with him. This was my defense, and this is her defense.
I like the way that looks, you know, the shadows and stuff.
Yeah. It also complements the car scene perfectly because now she's talking and you got his reactions. Mm-hmm. And his reactions are, I'd say, as good as her reactions during the car scene.
Thanks, Vinny. I get $50 for you.
We get out of here. Dave was all about bathing it in moonlight. Great Dave Klein.
This is a real Storaro type shot, like woman is blue. You know what I mean?
He wanted to shoot through a champagne glass at one point, but I was like, I don't see how he fails, how it corresponds to the scene, Dave. But yeah, Dave was all about the moonlight shot, and needless to say, we didn't shoot near a window or moonlight or.
And here comes the music. The music fading.
Never mind that. Details. Dave Kerner again with a wonderful
genius
score. Yeah, I mean, the movie, the opening piece, which we never really talked about. Tomb of Wonderful. We're not doing it justice.
No, we're not.
But that and many other pieces in the flick, Dave composed and did it on very simple instruments. Nothing huge. Because the budget Miramax allowed for the score, wasn't it?
Didn't you ask for extra?
I'm glad I got the compliment. Really good.
I asked for a few extra bucks, a few extra pounds, some ducats, but it just didn't
pan out. Asked for 50 extra bucks for cab fare, and they told you, got your money, now go make the movie and shut up. Mallrats guy.
I really love that line, you know, I feel justified lying in your arms. And the kiss that he gives her at the end of the scene as well.
It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's tasteful.
So I think it's
I wanted to go for the French.
And I kept going for tongue. I was like, stop. Come on. It doesn't sell the moment.
Because it's from there that shot.
See that? Kissing
very,
your woman. Mm. Look at your... God, look at you. See how I just
hurt
him
once?
It
doesn't hurt now.
Hurts no more.
And here we go with the joke.
Yeah, so see, as per usual, Kev has to ruin it. Can't leave a tender moment alone, as Billy Joel would say.
I thought I was
more. Pillow fight.
There it is. Mm, you hear that? I gave her a little with the pillow.
Yeah, well, you hit her real hard, and she goes, stop.
What are you wearing boxers there, or briefs, or is that a combo?
Bob, can we see his dick in this shot, too?
Uh-oh.
This is one of Ben's best scenes in the movie. It's a great app.
Look at how excited he is. Funny because at first he's excited. Like, what? We're going to play a game? And then he realizes his friend is punching holes in his
book. I thought he was going to start throwing me the tennis ball again and I could go cut. Ooh, finger. Remember there were some other options besides finger cuffs.
Oh, yeah. There was. In the earlier draft of the script, it was pitch and putt.
Which is
genius.
Yeah, but
and in France, it's multi-plug.
Yes, in France, it's multi-plug. They don't know what the fuck.
Is multi-plug something that
like,
is
you thing plug
utility
many.
Plug? They plug many things.
Well, did they just sub
multi-plug?
Yep, as multi-plug.
She has the woman who has a slut, she has a multi-plug. Yeah. You know who she is.
It's all the French
that's
analyzing.
As good as your Denzel.
That's the French. What do you mean, Kevin?
Here comes the other Spike Lee shot. My other, you know, Spike Lee just rip-off shot. Whereas the other one stole from Malcolm X, this one is so obviously stolen from Do the Right Thing.
Aside from that, mention who this guy was in Clerks.
This is the guy. This is the guy who got cut out of Clerks. My cousin, John William, the guy that killed Dante. If you have the Clerks laser disc, you see that cut footage where he comes in and flat out shoots Dante.
But you know what? Save your money.
Because it's not a Criterion.
That's right.
The hallmark of quality, Criterion. That vest was a last-minute addition. It actually belonged to our first AD.
So nice
John was just wearing flannel, and I said, you got to put it on.
Len's kind of a lifeguard effect.
It's a Marty McFly kind of thing going on there. And, of course, shamefully, just referring back to our past success with the quick stop in the background, for the first time seen in color, unless you saw the Soul Asylum video.
Never recognize it in color.
Or perhaps if you saw the rough cut of Mallrats.
That's right, where we included a shot of quick stop. We come right out of that moment back here.
Back to Earth.
For some bravura acting by Ben.
See, I had this idea.
Ben's looking for smokes. There, no smokes. I don't want to hear this guy. I need an excuse to go find some cigarettes. I'll leave this thing. I'll take the book with me.
I have to motivate
Ben's somehow. Business is he's looking for smokes. Are there smokes here? These are circulars. But,
I'm looking for cigarettes. This? Look, I find the box now. There's no. There
is
anything?
Out. Is it going to pan out?
See, those are out.
No cigarettes. What if she's carrying
a disease? You're all making light of this. He's great in this. This is my favorite scene.
Or Jason.
Ben.
Oh, he's wonderful in the scene. Mm-hmm. But he's looking
for... Not taken away from Jason. But.
Watch this shit, and he just beats this machine. Rick Darris referring to Rick Darris again, a guy referred to in all three flicks. Notorious Rick Darris.
He's never even been with a guy. Much less these two fucking zeros.
I'm telling you, the bitch could be a bigger fucking germ farm than that monkey in Outbreak.
You like that, don't you?
Yeah. Good.
That crudled up line always gets like a real reaction in theaters where people are just so taken aback by it.
But it's also a weird moment because it's a very, it is a pretty funny line, the monkey in Outbreak, but it's tempered very quickly with this emotional outburst, this violent outburst.
Body
this
check.
Took you. Multiple takes, because we did it in a wide. No,
God,
it's not to say you were bad, dude. It just took you multiple fucking takes. You were wonderful, but there was a certain performance that we were looking for.
You wanted the veins to come out. I remember that. You were like, in rehearsal, I could see your veins pop out of your neck. Do it again. I was like, well, what am I supposed to do, a Lou Ferrigno and pop my veins out? But we got it eventually.
We got it eventually.
Look, you can see my radio mic on my shirt, my chest right there, a little bump.
And Dwight Yule's reintroduction to the film.
Dwight comes back. Hooper comes back for the first time in like almost an hour. The character comes in, whips a little gayness on the audience, leaves, comes back later on to whip a little
more. Just a little gayness to spice things up. It's something for the kids and something we can all enjoy back home.
Some gayness tempered with some wisdom.
Yes, a sage-like character.
Not to say that wisdom necessarily tempers gayness. The two may, in fact, go hand in hand.
Well, I believe that gayness
Thank you, man.
Sage-like wisdom. Oh my God, I think Bob just outed himself.
No, Bob, not you!
Jesus, I had no idea. You had a pansy in here.
Now, this was originally set somewhere else, wasn't it, this scene?
Tower Video. Yeah. They were looking for laser discs.
For Criterion.
It's the hallmark quality. But Tower, why, Scott, why didn't we shoot a Tower?
Because this was just down the street from our office.
So it wasn't a scandal.
It was just lazy. It was just like, let's just go down there.
Let's go to Jack's. This was shot at Jack's, where so much of the movie. Jack, who was a wonderful guy. Jack's last name would be...
I don't know.
Yeah, nobody knows Jack.
Tagliabani?
No. But Jack is a real estate magnate in Red Bank. He actually owns Jack's Music, has for many years now. He gave us the upstairs, two floors of that building, to the building they're in right now, the record store building, where we built the studio, and we used the upstairs for
craft service.
And he was really great and very giving. Let us, you know, illegally tap into his electricity. And
then he let somebody in the back door steal all my shit from upstairs.
He's still crying about a couple fucking shirts that got
just some bad gear that he didn't need
like
to wear.
A King's Ransom on a Michael Bay picture. You can buy any shirt he wants.
Bro, I'm
crying.
I got a speeding ticket. We were doing Chasing Amy, and it wiped out my salary. I was broke.
Yeah, that was sweet. Where are we coming home from?
Oh, you were in the car, huh? Muse almost got me arrested for real because he was like, yo, you got some grass?
I hope he's kidding.
No, that was because what's her name was passed on
that's
the
right.
back.
She all right, enough. Hush. We're rolling now.
Wild gay man. I'm going to top that off on a gay black man. Notoriously the most swishy at a bunch.
You're strong.
Hey, here's a line.
Are you a
breath? Oh, this is hysterical. This little kid was great.
This is a terrific... I was so proud to get this Houdini song into the movie. Very unappreciated rap act of the early 80s, Houdini.
Houdini's Friends, how many of us have them? Was one of their early hits.
Mm-hmm.
Houdini's
come out at night, but this is an unappreciated Houdini hit.
He's a devil.
Or non-hit, I should say. Gotta love that pin, the black man is God. Dwight found that, brought in. He's like, can I wear this? I was like, oh.
That looks like a very wide angle lens there. On Ben.
Well, yeah, it is. Not the most flattering of low lenses, wide angle.
I don't think we ever flattered you once.
Not really. Verbally.
You rose above it because your character, your dialogue.
Not really.
So
I just sort of look like, you know, the weird, pasty-faced character actor.
And some people wondered, rightfully so, why she ever fell for you in this picture.
You know, Kevin, it's funny because nobody wondered that. And you'd think that would be an issue, and yet it really wasn't. You look at a lot of the literature and things that have been written, the treaties that have been written since.
Treaties. There's a moment here where the camera moves a little bit earlier than the actors move. And I only point it out because it's commentary track.
Where are you going? Where are you going? Come back.
Oh, yeah.
Dave is a little ahead of himself. But
Kevin likes to move on. It's fine, Dave.
Yeah, we're done. Come on, Greg. It's fine.
More of that 16mm Steadicam work going on here.
Yeah.
I think Yanni actually was Dwight's idea to say Yanni.
Yes, because originally it was Myra Breckenridge because it was a laser disc. But then we needed something to put in, and he said Yanni. And I said, Yanni's good. That almost sounded
convincing. Do yourself a favor.
Again.
Sweet. I do a good Dwight. Ooh, Yanni.
Ice rink.
The beginning of a new chapter. Ice rink. Yes, very, very important scene in the flick. Originally written to take place in a kitchen.
Interesting.
Yes, a kitchen.
Whose kitchen?
You mean like the rest of the heavy scenes to take place in the kitchen?
Exactly. Like for some reason, a lot of people, you know, I like food, I like to eat. So I set a lot of my pictures in the kitchen.
All your drama happens in the, around the
exactly,
kitchen.
Around the counter, you know, places where you can snack. No, it took place between you guys in her kitchen, I believe it was.
They were washing dishes, right?
They were getting ready for dinner, preparing dinner. She was cooking something. But at one point, somebody said we should open the movie up for scope. That was an early note from Miramax before we actually went off, struck out on our own and made the movie without Miramax, only to come back to Miramax later on. But there was one genius man who we were mocking the note of scope. And one genius man named Scott Mosier, who was just like, what do they mean scope? And I'm like, well, you know, they mean like set things on a roller coaster. Like if you have a scene in a room, why not put it on a roller coaster? Because that's what we were told. And Scott's like, well, that's just silly, he goes.
No, I remember we were on the phone with John, and we were arguing with John about it, and I was like what, take the fucking kitchen scene and set it in a fucking hockey rink?
I love it.
No, Kevin's eyes lit up.
I was like, a hockey rink? Yeah, because the picture didn't have enough hockey in it, except for we had the Sega hockey by that point. But
and then went all
big moment right here. Watch the deflation. Joey Adams' finest non-speaking performance right there. The eyes downcast. You just see right there, too. It's continued. Great moment, seething the Ben. And here.
Yeah.
So weakly, a person whose dignity has just been insulted. You've uncovered a dark secret. And
I don't stop, Kev. I don't give up.
No,
you just start pushing here and it never stop. It's what I do.
And she plays along.
I'm like, no, don't try to play games with me. I keep coming at you.
Yeah. Well, he's so good in this scene. You're so good. This is a scene where you watch this and you realize you must have been there.
I don't want to talk about that, but I want to say I'm no stranger to these certain feelings. We're just like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, you know what? Where'd I find it? I don't know where I heard it.
A man with some anger, some aggression, some issues to deal with, and I think it helped to make this movie. I know, for me, it helped. I mean, it's well documented in the disc jacket, my feelings why this movie was made. But this scene right here is so key because Joey has to show a lot of colors. She goes through that whole painful thing and then covers it back up and goes back into it. Almost conversational. It's very pleasantly conversational.
They always try to do that with you, Kevin, to try to cover it up. Oh, I don't know. Oh, how are you doing?
But if
she's
playing your character for a fool at this point.
Yeah, but I'm nobody's fool, my friend.
Well, in real life, you're not. But
no, neither is my character.
No, you were quite the fool.
What?
Yes.
Why am I finding out I'm not the hero all of a sudden?
Here it comes.
Here it comes.
The big AC3 moment, actually.
Here, and listen to this. This is the... I pulled his dick out. Really? Oh, look at that. Wonderful delivery.
Really?
No. I blew him while Coey fucked me.
Oh. A little cinematic for Chris Smith.
Here's the lots of
the
our
gaffer
members.
On the right.
Yeah.
Rick Darris from Clerks on the left.
Ernie O'Donnell, who played Rick Darris, is actually sitting right next to Ben.
He's flanked by crew members. Yeah.
Continuing that Kevin Smith beard goatee motif. Van Dyke.
Look at us. Dude, we look twins. Like twins. We're both like, ooh.
I asked Joey to wear a beard at one point, but you
I thought Joey was your beard.
But a bunch.
There's another crew member, the best boy.
Alan.
Yeah.
Mass hysteria on the hockey rink. Wonderful scene right here. It's my favorite.
Those guys really just got in a brawl on their own. You know, they just started brawling.
Someone lost a tooth in that scene, too.
Yeah,
shooting that scene. But let's concentrate on this scene right here. Because this is my favorite thing I've ever put on film. And I think something happens in this scene that's quite nice. And I'm not... if anyone knows me, I'm the guy, I'm the least biggest fan of my own work in terms of blowing my own horn, but I think that this is one of the best scenes ever committed to celluloid.
Thank you. And modestly put, thank you. The greatest scene ever shot.
There are two. These two performances are so wonderful, and her performance is, you know, she has the most to do in the scene. But God, is it powerful! Six takes.
Yeah, she was
and
really
her
amazing.
Her voice was rocked. Just rocked.
She killed herself doing this scene.
And we did it wide. We did it close.
This is
peppered with a lot more fox than was in the script, yeah. If I can recall.
Oh, that's what happens, baby.
Mm. Jim Jack said it a while ago on Mallrats. Be careful of Ben Affleck; he'll throw a lot of vulgarity into your script.
It's not me; it's her.
The scene's just almost—it's painful to watch the first couple times.
A lot of people say that in terms of
it's just so raw.
Yeah, and it also for some reason strikes home. A lot of people have been through this conversation.
About all this.
This is the scene.
Stand your ground now.
And it, I think, makes Joey Adams a star.
A certifiable.
Absolutely. This is, if you didn't believe in Joey Adams before this scene, fuck. Save your money and buy her and put her in your film, because this is a tour de force performance right here. It's the third time I said tour de force on the commentary. I'll say it again.
Because you like the French.
Yeah. I just came from France.
There's another double cut coming up here, a very subtle double cut. Between typical
high school sex and getting fucked.
This guy just doing his lines along with himself. Right? Oof. Powerful. God damn it, that's powerful, man. The words sat on the page, and she just breathed life into them like the maker. Even though technically I was the maker. But, just incredible. I still, even after we broke up, I actually went to see the movie after we broke up, and you know, we didn't break up horribly. It was a decent breakup, but still, I went there and was able to, you know, watch it not as like, this is my girlfriend, and just watch clean, very objectively. And this scene still blows me away.
Yeah,
scene actually.
Makes
me kind of glass over.
These lines here.
It's painful because if you're a guy who's a cat like myself, who's the jealous type and insecure type at least at one point in your life, you know this scene very well because you've played it out again and again in your life. You're looking into the eyes of a person you love and seeing them, you know, just can't comprehend the fact that you want them to apologize for the life they had before you met them.
Just looking at you like, what's wrong with you?
What is
dumb
your
bastard
problem? I love you, but God, you're stupid.
Kevin, was that? Oh, here's the cut.
Here's the double cut right
love
there.
That.
Huge moment. Huge.
I don't know why they come down on me.
Two audiences watch that moment and react differently. Most people go, ugh, when you push her away. And then there are guys like Walter and Brian watch that moment and was like, oh, I know that moment. I know that feeling. Walter is like, I know that feeling, man. We just want to push him away. They're so dirty.
This line here is fantastic. His final line with the music.
And what's that?
A normal couple.
Here we go.
And this fade out on her fucked with the music coming up.
Yes. As she screams and beats the car.
You think they'll call this a self-congratulatory accompaniment criterion for a voiceover?
Probably.
Here's my car. My car gets beaten up.
Now, this is a scene right here that we actually trimmed after watching it with a few test audiences. There's a moment here where Jason, after Jason sees the girl and nods,
he opens his arm and gives me a hug.
He moved over close to you, opened up his arms, and hugged you, held you, and you kind of cried into his chest. And test audiences laughed. And I think we attributed that to...
I think it was really that, you know, Jason's so funny in the movie that that's what people were used to. And also there was the preceding scenes were so heavy that people kind of wanted a release or a laugh. I don't know. I thought it was really sweet because I thought it was a great kind of thing between friends, you know what I mean? But... sometimes when a scene that works by itself doesn't work in the context of the whole movie.
My theory was that it always had something to do with his funny arms.
Goofy looking arms. Yeah.
We didn't include it on the supplements, though, because it's so quick.
This is one of the...
But here it is. Here's the moment. This is the moment that, you know, some people wait the entire movie for.
Very few people.
Second reveal shot.
Oh, boo!
Who is it? Who comes in to steal the show, little muse? This is, you got to comment all through this, dude. This is what you have to be talking.
Toss the salad. Do you know what that's a reference to?
It wasn't, though.
Really?
It wasn't. And when I heard Chris Rock's routine later on, I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, I was asking for some cash.
Just giving a blow by blow of what's happening in the scene. What were you feeling when you shot the scene? You were actually in your groove.
Take a look at the issue. It's tough to pull off a scene opposite.
You are now. Quite like I'm like now. I got to point out for the record, that's not my real hair. It's a wig. First time I actually wore a wig.
But it's got a nice sheen.
Yeah, it kind of looks like my hair, but it's like a lion's mane, whereas my long hairs are stringy. Not quite like that.
Oh,
that's the Silent Bob coat I wore in Clerks, unlike the one I wore in Mallrats, which is a big leather affair.
See, you went back to your roots. Went back to where you came
my
from.
Roots.
Back into
How did you feel being in a scene with the legendary Jay and Silent Bob?
Tough to acting with two guys who are like, you know, on Mars. You know what I mean? Like, you have to ground the scene, make it real. You want to make the audience believe these characters actually exist. It's a challenge.
More importantly, Kristen Mosier.
Mars.
Yeah, Scott's sister played the waitress, Kristen Mosier.
Who was the makeup assistant?
Yep,
I believe.
Worked on the flick. Oh, nobody has one job on this movie. No. On any BSQ production.
Every crew member gets
right
in the
here,
movie.
Huge. Bitch pressing charges. Made the trailer, although without the bitch part.
Yeah, funny stuff.
Let me tell you a little story about shooting the scene, though. Jason Mewes.
Let me tell you about a sweaty, nervous bitch named Kevin Smith, who just sat down and started sweating himself immediately.
He did.
Talked so much shit the whole movie about, just shut up, just do it, relax, get in there. All of a sudden, my boy got in front of the camera, got real tight, and was like, who wrote this?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
I was so wordy. Who could do this dialogue I'm saying?
I'm like, saying nothing but bitches and money.
Yeah. I did for the first time in my life. I actually appreciated how hard it is to memorize that fucking dialogue. It's just so verbose. From now on, we're only working in Spartan sentences in the flicks.
On this Criterion voiceover, Muse is kind of like the Admiral Stockdale and shit. He just fires things out like, bitches and money. He's interjecting.
The big fat butts.
When does he start eating the sugar? Which
that's when I'm telling the story.
Yeah.
You know what? Watch. We'll have to wait till it comes on. No one notices, really, I don't think, when I was looking at you being small.
Yeah, that's when I tell the story and point that out later on. You just said Mysterio, though, dude. That's a comics reference.
I don't know.
What the comic character? What comic book?
X-Muse.
Spider-Man.
X-Muse.
Spider-Man.
Oh, Mysterio, I'm doing Magneto.
This diner was just a nightmare to shoot in, too, because there were a bunch of drunken patrons bugging
us. Yeah, some dude going, I'm Bruce Willis. I'm better than Bruce Willis. And he was a cop.
Yeah,
he was a drunk, hammered, stupid cop. How unusual!
Strange.
He has a past. I'll say stuff. See, that's the Jersey accent.
Past. Eating chicks out. That's how you signify eating chicks out. You move your finger up and down real close in front of your lip. See that little moment where you're stung. You're like, I can't believe he yelled at you.
There was a cut there from an earlier draft of the script when he starts talking about the dog. A very nasty story.
Yeah, instead we just reference it. A little more classy. Just
Only slightly.
All that experience.
See, grounding this situation.
What do you,
We added this in here.
I think when we shot it, I said, can you say Ninny Shithead? And you were like, what's Ninny?
I said, Nini, shoot head.
And you were like, Nini Balls? Nini Balls being a good friend of J.K. Third time out as the same character. What's that about? How do you feel?
I feel like throwing a fourth one out.
Yeah,
word.
That's right, dude.
Do you feel me rolling a blunt?
Do you feel it's the role you were born to play?
Yeah, man, there's going to be like 30 movies that just Jay and Silent Bob. Come on.
I'm going to tell him that in quiet moments.
I'm going to be all old.
It's the real Lenny, you know what I mean? No. Tell me again about how there's going to be 30 movies with me and I'm going to turn them out.
Yes. Now the real performance starts.
Now we can just chat.
Jay Adams, Ben Affleck, amateurs.
I don't want to bore the audience.
Silent Bob strikes back. Just can't stand the fact that he's been berated.
See him move his hair out of his face because that mane was in his mouth.
That's right.
No.
Chewing hair. Story of my life.
What's up with the burglar's cap you got on, Muse? What's going on? I mean, you look like the Hamburglar.
He's the thief of jokes because he comes and he steals your fucking movie, dude. Right out from under you. He steals your scene. Steals you. Huge.
Terrible.
My showgirls moment. My showgirls homage. I love that. Just a flat-out homage to Elizabeth Berkley. That's the kind of cat I am.
You're your hero, dude. You tried to hire Elizabeth Berkley for this role first. You were like, I wrote this movie for Elizabeth Berkley. Then you started dating Joey, and you were like, no, I wrote it for Joey Adams.
I was told that Elizabeth Berkley saw your scene, an early cut of your scene, and wept.
Right in front of my eyes, man. Yeah, cried like a baby. Meeting.
That's right.
The sugar is because in Clerks, I ate sugar, so we said, hey, want me some more sugar? Right?
That's right. And we cut it. So I said, this time you're going to eat the fucking sugar. And you were off. You ate a lot of damn sugar.
You did down a whole sack of sugar. That was nasty. By the end of the night, you got a real shifty look in your eye.
Watch this. Menage a trois, I believe it's called. Ooh, he knows. Ben like that. Funny line right here.
Saint shithead.
Excellent delivery. And you hear the sugar just hitting the table, and it always makes me mad.
Great score, too, here.
Dave Perner, again, man, really knew how to score this scene.
Here's the small line coming up.
Is that a Batman pin?
Of course. Odor of the Bat, dude.
Here it is.
Odor of the fucking Silent Bob spewing parables.
Here it is, it's coming up.
Sage-like character of the movie.
Straight in the eye, I tell her it's over. I walk.
Fucking A.
Fucking A. No, idiot. It was a mistake. I wasn't disgusted with her.
I was at one point, I think I called you
At that moment, I felt small. Like I'd lacked experience.
There you go.
I felt small.
I didn't even know that. So I watched the footage. Dude just staring at my lap and shit.
He let you know, though. He's giving away secrets.
Yeah, he did. Without a word. That's the kind of performer he is. A wordless, a pantomime. Just a brilliant performance. Notice the cigarettes, which you see a lot in the movie. Our own brand, Nails.
Fake, trumped-up horseradish. Non-existent brand name. Mostly Camel Lights and Marlboro Lights were used for the actual filming, but no animals were harmed.
Now, they're, look at that. Look at he rolls his eyes,
pushed
man. I just thought that was great. And he's getting so tired of hearing this story. And there's a moment where Jason plays like he's never heard this story before. Like when? Was she in Canada? And then at the end of the scene, he says he's heard it a zillion times.
That's because he's a genius. Throws different things out there. You understand that? Take a look. Watch it again.
I believe that's called a script.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's all in the script, my friend.
As soon as Jay starts talking, the music changes back, of course.
Yeah. Nice little crossover and changeover.
Yeah, that's a bad...
Catching a bus to Chi-Town. Very important line.
What's to come? What's to come?
Setting something up.
Ooh.
What might that be?
Wait and see, my friends. Wait and see.
Look at the backlight these guys get.
Look at the dismay at me not being in a comic book anymore.
But that ain't like us at all slapsticky and shit, run around like a couple of...
This is my nod.
This is the best line. This is the best one.
Snoochie boochies. Who the fuck talks like that? That is fucking baby talk.
Who the fuck talks like that?
He also diss it pretty badly in the opening. The opening scene that got cut.
Yeah.
They talk about the sneaky
which is
foam.
On the commentary, which is on the supplementary section.
Yeah.
That shirt that Jason's wearing is a Demonishy shirt. local metal band.
But wait,
right
here, no one ever hears this because there was that.
Well, they're not hearing now because you're talking. This is what I was talking about. You're referring that you've never heard the story before early in the scene, and then you're like, why do you always have to tell that fucking gay story for? And then you get one last shot in as you leave. Jane, Silent Bob scene, almost 10 minutes, man. Some people, some unenlightened people. It's my favorite scene in the movie, man. Just like the same people that saw Clerks, and then we're always saying, like, my favorite scene is when Jane, Silent Bob dance. It's always insulting to a dude who spends as much time on dialogue as myself. Because it's like, what?
Really? That was my favorite scene in Clerks. See?
That's what I'm all about, man.
Oh, the big three-way scene.
The beginning.
That was me just thinking about life in the park for some reason. Don't ask questions, no time to a sprain.
No, just checking out the yearbook, formulating your devious plan, your deviant plan, one might say.
Yes.
We got to point out for the record, man, Joey goes off at the end of the scene, and we shot this scene all in one day. We didn't have a lot of film. For some reason, we didn't order enough film, so we can only shoot specific coverage. We couldn't cover the entire scene from every angle. We could only shoot so many lines or setups. We shot it in pieces. It worked out well. It was probably one of the easiest scenes in the movie to cut, and cut really, just cut like butter, as they say. But Joey had to wait 21 setups before we got to her close-up and still gave it her all, you know, in every over for your coverage, for Jason's coverage. Just was there, completely there, and then by the time we got to her stuff, was even, you know, in the zone.
She was all over it. Yeah, worked. She did a great job.
She worked it, owned it. And that's why I think I had a lot. I was just proud of all three of you, because you, all three of you, it's so evident that you worked so damn hard in this movie. Did more things, showed more colors than I think you ever showed before.
Nose to the grindstone. Yeah, I'd say so. Not all, you know, they're all sad Kevin Smith colors where you're just a sorry, humiliated wretch at the end of the film. Colors, nonetheless. Shades of gray.
Shut up.
Shut your mouth, punk. Just like pointing a finger at him, and later on just flat out kissing a man.
Yeah, launched a whole new career for me here in adult male cinema.
Hey, that Jane, that's such a big lie.
That's right. That was a Tom Taggart piece over Ben's shoulder.
Get yourself out of the movie. You have more screen time than
silently, wordlessly. That was the plan originally. We weren't going to have a scene in the movie. It was just going to be, you were going to see Jay and Silent Bob in the drawing.
There was actually an animated sequences.
It's right in the long version of the script. Bob, you know the long version of the script. You were one of the only people who read the long version.
I remember the long script spewing out of your printer. The pre-first draft was 135 pages. And before you submitted the first official draft,
there it is.
You know, we cut about 10 pages. And the shooting script ended up to be 90 some pages.
93.
But what's very interesting is that the first cut was 135 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that shocked us all.
Because it was more drama than Clerks. The first draft of Clerks, or the shooting draft of Clerks, was
36
pages. The first cut was 105.
Yeah.
105 minutes. So the comedy runs fast because the dialogue was so fast. Here, people were savoring the dialogue, I think speaking more naturalistically than they've spoken in the last two flicks. Yeah. And so the drama played out longer than it was on the page.
About to pay tribute to you and Scott as editors. I've been with you in the editing room, and you are ruthless with your own material. For the good of the film, you'll sacrifice anything. And the way you brought that 135-minute cut down to the final film, you know, without any looking back, just great job.
Mm-hmm.
And you did it with Clerks too. After Clerks was supposedly a finished film, you were able
to hack more. See, this is, I think Ben had the toughest job in the movie. I'm not just saying it because he's here. But,
the guy who showed up.
Yeah, the dude that actually showed. No, Ben had the tough job because people walk away from the movie with Jason, you know, thinking Jason Leigh is a funny character and a good guy. And Alyssa kind of walks away the victimless victim, the strong, you know, she was wronged. The woman wronged. You walk away as the clown. You know, not the clown. You learn things by the end of the movie. But at this point in the movie, people are hating you. You know, they're sitting there going, why is this guy so stupid? He's coming up with these dopey suggestions. Yeah. And that's tough, man. That's tough to actually bear that role out.
It was a burden, a yoke. But the thing is, I'm accustomed to it, you know what I mean? Because folks feel that way about me in my everyday life. So I didn't mind it so much. We say no. Well, then talk about a bitch slapping. I mean, I took a whopping. I just want to say, for the record, that Joey cuffed me in my face so many times. Yeah. And Kevin just tried again. Just reverse. We'll go over here.
It's true. When you guys were kissing, I was like, all right, cut, cut, cut. But when, as soon as she was beating you around, I was like, nah, we can go another three times.
She unloaded on
and
me.
There was the,
she hits like a mule kick. All right. Mike Tyson.
By the way, another big controversy about this film is whether or not Banky is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And that
there was a line. There was a line actually in the movie.
Right here.
No. Oh. Early on, where Banky said, where Holden says to Banky.
Right after he kisses him.
Yeah, he goes, face it, Banky.
Right after he kisses him, he says,
you may very well be gay, he says. And we cut that line out because it was a little too on the nose. And also, it made it sound like the delivery, which isn't your fault, the line and the delivery coupled in the scene just made it feel like an accusation and like a negative. You know, because he was like, you're gay and it's terrible. Stop being gay.
I just kissed you, you're gay.
You just might have MS.
And the thing was, the dude was—he was just flat out kissed his friend and then accuses him of being gay. So we were like,
"French too,
exactly." So we popped that line out real quick, and it played a lot better. But then he's right. A lot of people ask, like, "Is Banky gay?" And
I think yes. The answer is yes, it is.
I don't have a take. My take on it is this. I'm not going to give you a take on it. Let people figure it out for themselves, man. You don't need me telling you.
He's gay. Gay is the win.
So that's what one guy thinks. I'm sure other people have other opinions.
Now, the close-up of Joey was actually two takes put together, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more than two. Really it was actually ones. A couple different ones.
But I thought there were I think the bulk of it came from two, because I remember when we were looking at the dailies in your office, mm-hmm. and I think it was the first and the last one really, really shined the most. And they were very different, too.
Well, the first one, the first half is taken from the first take, and then the second half is taken from this take, because we actually closed down for a couple minutes and send everyone out of the room, and I just kind of hung out with Joey for a while, and we tried to figure out what she wanted to do with the ending part of the scene, and got really, really emotional about it. And she got to this place gave this tremendous delivery of these lines.
I love Holden's tear.
Tear.
That's fantastic.
Classy single tear just rolls down his cheek.
Class.
The tear that landed many women's hearts.
You can't really see it on TV, actually, can you?
You can. You will.
See it on the disc.
You can and you will. Well, because it's a quality Criterion Laserdisc. Right there. Look at that line. I sincerely doubt it.
Yeah, that was
eyes.
Fantastic.
Just wonderful.
That's funny. Yeah. That's the one joke in the middle of the scene that kind of gives a little levity to it.
I've been down roads like this before. Many times.
I know it.
There's a moment I got to go back to and give a heads up to is where you said, no, it won't. I thought about that. Fantastic delivery.
Thanks a lot.
I mean, just nailed that line.
I heard this, yeah.
And she has one coming up. Well, she's actually just passed, where she goes, ooh, there's a tear.
Yeah, there it is.
It's a sad story, man. Damn, I'm already sad. Is there a need for a whopping?
Horizons. When she does the broaden your horizons line, sorry, I just remembered it.
It's all right.
That's the fantastic thing that she has in the scene.
I love this,
this scene always occurred to me like she was snorting coke out of your mouth. Like she's just doing a line of your dick or something.
There's the tear.
Just a big, and we actually pulled that snort out too.
We brought down the snort.
Here it is. Hold on.
So, loud.
This is just, I'm sad enough, aren't I? I love her. What?
Great,
I
mean, hug, great hug, great hug.
It's tender, and then all of a sudden, I mean, is this entirely necessary? Honey, please.
And then you get what
Ready?
You deserve. Schwap.
That hurt.
I heard
that
women cheer in audiences.
Yeah, yeah. So France. I hate
sacrifice.
France, they just cheered. You were the official land.
Her delivery of the hymn is like just so...
You were the damn goat in France, is what I'm telling you.
Don't
the
go
French there. Don't understand cinema.
I love the way the music comes up here and you go back to that real wide shot.
This is actually... we shot
that was our master.
Which we only did...
Once or twice.
Yeah, we did one master where it was the first half of it was the opening with you pushing the chair out.
And then we jumped right to the end.
And then you sat there after you said, we all got to have sex together, and we sat there for like 30 seconds, and then we shot her walking out in this part with Banky walking out. Presumably Banky's going to his room to smack it and think about your offer. I didn't write that in the script. That's what I was getting at.
You see how one man just sits alone. Can you see how that? Can you see that's the theme of this film? One man alone against the world.
Very heroic take on it. If you listen very closely here, you hear the
Walt Flanagan's dog.
Yeah, another mention of Walt Flanagan's
and
dog.
And here's Ethan Suplee again with his some wonderful ADR stuff that is kind of buried in the mix, but it's really funny if you listen for it.
It's funny. It's unimportant for what goes on visually, but if you've seen the movie like 19 times, and by all means,
it should be buried in the mix. I mean, it shouldn't be the first thing that you're laughing at because there's this other scene that's going on.
Right.
But listen to it if you've seen
it.
Yeah,
that's funny. Awesome.
So is that what happened with you and Holden? He'll be in Dogma too, right?
Look at his contempt for it.
You'll notice that Banky's wearing a different hat now backwards because he's moved on in life.
He's a different hat backwards, kooky kind of guy than he was before.
Yes. So we got the Kinnison kind of chapeau.
That's right. That happened to me once. Who's
Jimmy Palmiotti jokes out, the guys who create Ash drawing in front of you, but huge moment right here. I know this, we keep saying huge moment. The movie's full of it, full of huge moments. Maybe it's just full of it. But this is a very fine moment.
The shared moment bit, which a lot of people don't get, but if you watch the film, of course, you see it.
Because you should have cut to Joey before.
Oh, actor as editor.
Nah, we can't. You couldn't, because we need to reveal Joey, you dork.
Yeah. We don't know what you guys are talking about.
Wrecked, William.
To stay in front of the camera.
All I remember is a bitch, after we shot this shit, a bitch was sitting there going like, God, that's emotional.
It was
that's
emotional.
What the scene is. The whole movie's about me and my boy, and we're not friends anymore. He's going,
you're right.
And now he's telling me how to cut the shit.
Fuck. Listen, fuck you two guys. You don't know what the fuck you're talking
about. You're hearing his ADR a lot more on this.
It's touching. The performance between you two.
It is
wordless performance is touching. Right there, though, where you put your hand up.
Yeah.
You got brown stains all over your finger from the
smoke.
It looked like you had your fingers up Banky's ass.
Bastard.
Just buried in shit or something.
You know, I knew that was going to come up. You know, I wish
came up with audience
know you're across America to tune $12 million.
Like, people were
like,
what?
What's with your dirty fingers?
Go find a John and
but
some
But barring that, look at this. Touching stuff between you and him. When you walk away and he kind of ponders your absence, that is
nice.
Always gets me. I got glassy-eyed watching dailies on that.
Here comes Kevin's sister and her cameo.
Who's also a lesbian.
She's not a lesbian.
She was in Clerks.
Mary, I forgot. Yeah, she was in Clerks. She played the caged animal masturbator in Clerks. My sister.
She's very funny here.
Doesn't quite have the hips that I have.
This stuff was.
I think I inherited my mother's hips, and she didn't.
Uh huh.
This stuff here we had to rewrite on the con.
Yeah,
floor.
It was very.
Because
there wasn't.
My sister wanted more lines, quite frankly.
Really? Is that really why?
Yeah, she wanted a little more things to do, so I had to, you know.
Look at you, dude! Your sister showed up was like,
"Damn, sister, dude! You know,
I can't
help her out.
Yeah.
Fuck, leave her alone."
There it is. It all comes full circle, and a perm.
Yeah.
Yes. We wanted to shave you, remember? But we had more stuff to shoot with
you. I would have loved
it. We wanted
it.
You to be beardless for the last.
I would have gotten bearded some of the short rock, too. Like, I got rid of the whole wave thing. I got rid of the bouffant. And I went with just
a
shaved head. That was
Clooney.
I came back like Clooney. Back from the ER. I like, hung over and
that's
just saved a couple lives. And I'm like,
wise
this is my new comic book.
And you got that Blake Carrington pompadour.
Yeah.
Blake Carrington.
That's smooth,
calling you
dude.
A dynasty bitch.
It's classy.
It's Jersey, man. You're the one who lives here.
And,
I ain't got no big hair, dude.
Speaking of the end of the film, there was a draft of the script that actually had them embracing.
There was a very brief in-between draft where you walk away, you're by the door, her friend comes back in, as it plays out now, but then she says, just some guy I knew. She doesn't say that. Instead, she says, her friend's talking to her, she says, will you excuse me or something? She excuses herself, goes over you're making your way toward the exit. And she joined you. She was like holding. You guys looked at each other for a second, and kind of nothing to say. Didn't know what to say, and then just embraced. And we thought people would construe that as you guys getting back together.
Because wasn't it that I gave her a jump or something?
I think you took her in the bathroom and humped her like an animal. No, you idiot. It was a touching kind of, we've been through so much, let's just embrace. But we were afraid people would think that it was more. It was meant
to be like...
Of course
they would think that. Use your fucking head.
Well, we did use our fucking heads and we didn't put in the flag.
The music here is fantastic, too.
We got to point out, too, that if it wasn't cut, you would see that she worked up her tears, too.
Yeah, well,
no
you can
Visine
still see
here.
It, though. You can still...
Yeah, but, I mean, we do cut away.
Yeah, you're not sure.
No Visine. That's all there on camera. Look at that. She's bracing herself. My favorite delivery in the movie, hands down, is coming up. It's yours, too. Just so happens that you're here.
Thank God.
Yes. I'm going to reveal my secret heart here and say that your performance is my favorite in the entire movie.
Kevin.
And it's not just because you're here. I'm not just saying that. It's not because I just broke up with the actress. It's not because Lee's in France.
Which one is it? Is it this one?
Right there. It's really nice seeing you again. Power. Fuck. Ben Affleck is a star. Michael Bay watched that and said, I want him on a rock in space. I want the guy jumping through hoops chased by flame balls. I want him
up on an asteroid.
Yeah, that moment, that's what brought you to your fate now.
No, I'm flat out playing Kevin Smith in the film. If you look back, you'll notice now here it is, though. Seriously, this is my favorite moment.
Because this is a man who walks alone.
A man who walks alone. Do you see how I stand tall?
Yeah.
Look, just look back.
Just some guy.
Now, so there was one person on the Sundance selection committee, as a matter of fact. There was that woman who said she didn't quite agree with the movie, and she was maintaining that scene as Alyssa crying for her lost shot at heterosexuality.
Oh, she's an idiot.
She was an idiot, and I wanted to point out that that's not what it was about. She was crying because she was proud of you. You had,
had grown up.
But she was sad because it was too late. She wished she could have joined you. You know, she wished, why didn't you realize this a couple months back, dickhead? But, one year before.
And this...
Now she's just back with
this
the board.
Shot actually was in the beginning of the film from another take as well. You used that for the beginning of the...
And we used it to close the flick out.
Yeah.
It's a great song, too. I love his jam.
This is fantastic.
This an earlier jam, man, an earlier record, and the horse they rode in on.
Oh, really?
Burners and Dave was just like, "This will work, man." He's going,
Ethan gets first billing. That's cool.
That's cool.
Casey. What do you think, man? Musy, we never got your take on Chasing Amy, the comedy drama. Yeah, but where's in the pantheon in the three thus far? What is where does it stand? If you had to rate the movies, you can do it honestly.
I like this one the best, but I had most fun, of course, making Moritz.
Right. Why do you like this one the best?
I don't know. I just like watching Ben and Jason's, characters in it. It has to do with a little more comics.
You're a genius.
The last one we had Stan Lee, dude. That's a lot of comics.
That was nice. That was nice.
It was behind the scenes.
Lee, it was Lee and Affleck and not Lee in London.
That's the key now.
My boys.
We just missed the credits for BAM, which is where we're recording this commentary.
You're the commentary right
London
here in BAM.
What you call was good, but I don't know. I like this one the best.
Roundtable, it's Ben, in the end, thoughts? Final
in the
thoughts?
End, I'm really proud of the movie. I think it's great. I think it was a really personal
Real
story for Kevin.
That mic one more
even
time.
Even though pipe down, it. Bitch, I'm talking.
Criterion just for God's sakes, dude.
Kevin made a personal story that was very close to his heart, and I think everyone here is proud of him because he made the movie he wanted to make. Congratulations, Kevin. I'm proud of you.
We got to give a shout-out to Mosier, without whom there would be no movie. Chasing Amy would be
That's
on
the
page
truth.
At best. Scott Mosier is the hardest-working fucking bitch in the business. God damn it.
Yeah, Mosier.
Shout-out to Scott Mosier.
Mosier.
singer. Fuck. Bob Hawk, the man who just started the ball rolling with us, saw the flick, was there all through this flick. And when I turned to Bob and said, I'm thinking about having Holden propose a three-way to the other two characters, Bob said, do it. Might be because he's gay, but Bob told me to follow my heart.
Now, I love this film because it has proven to have spoken to so many people. It has crossed so many demographic lines, and I've always loved it, but it's been a great satisfaction to know that so many different kinds of people have responded to the film. And I'm still hearing from people because it's still at the $3 houses. Movie in New York, and they're still going.
JG, voice of Miramax.
Voice of Miramax.
Quickly.
Just proud of the movie. Proud of you guys.
We like that.
You did a great job.
Vincent?
I love the film to death. You know that?
Shut up, that fuck! Movie means a lot to me. Everyone in the room means a lot to me. Everyone who worked on the movie, Joey, Jason, Ben. Can't say enough.